Hello, and welcome to the Warlord Spotlight on the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting the Warlord series from DC Comics. In this Warlord Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Warlord 115 to 118. James, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing all right. I read this stuff a little while ago. I reread it yesterday, and we're picking up in the middle of the Legends crossover.
Yes. Yeah, it tied it all into the DCU, which was, I don't think it was needed, but they did it, so there's that.
Legends was the first crossover event after Crisis.
Okay.
So they had given their rejiggered universe a year or two to kind of re-solidify.
Okay.
And they tied in a bunch of stuff together with the Legend stuff that honestly didn't need to be tied in. It was a Darkseid-centric crossover, and I'm not a huge fan of the Fourth World. And I don't think it benefited the Warlord title at all for there to be a crossover.
I agree.
But they're going to do what they're going to do.
Yep, and here it is, and we have it before us.
I mean, really, the big aspect of the Legends crossover is that Desaad is impersonating the Warlord, trashing his reputation. Now the Warlord is known for him and his blood-mad horde terrorizing everybody.
Yeah, he's been such a hero in this whole world, Skitaris, mm-hmm. that, yeah, for him, it doesn't take long to take someone who's beloved and turn him into a villain if you start doing really mean things and bad things to the local populace.
Yeah, yeah. And while I think they could have done a really good story on how long it takes to build a reputation and how quick it can fall and how much longer it would take to rebuild it, that's not really what happens.
I agree. Yeah. It happened rather quickly. Just you see a few bits and then he's a bad guy. No questioning. It almost happened without the buildup for it, which I understand comics and stuff like that and short form storytelling back when this came out. But it's a little disappointing because I feel like there was a little more meat on the bone. It could have been done well.
Yeah. Yeah. And this was the same drumbeat they were hitting in a number of other titles because that was the point of Legends crossover. But really, in the last issue or two, they trash his rep. And then there's a thing in, I think it was this issue, this or the next, where a guy is like, don't lynch him. He's actually a good guy. I think it was in the next one where he saves somebody and
yep,
that guy takes one guy to speak up for him. And oh, all is right.
I'm like, it switches that quick. You guys are a fickle bunch, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was funny.
Now, the other person who was impersonating Travis with Desaad's device that did it was that female Vashik assassin.
Exactly.
And she gets named here Yasmala or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what happens to her, but she's now becoming a recurring character. And I don't know that we needed that. I never got the sense that those assassins were anything but hired killers. I had assumed they were all male because that just seemed like the sort of attitudes they would have.
Yeah, especially with the way the comic has been up until now. You know, quiet yeah. woman, that kind of stuff.
That stuff has gotten more pronounced with this writer of youngster and things of that sort. So I'm not sure how old Michael Fleischer was when he was writing this compared to Kerry Burkett or Mike Grell.
Yeah.
Or if he just thought that Travis Morgan was enough older than everybody else that suddenly he should be, you know, condescending to everybody.
Yeah, there's been several instances with different characters, and we've talked about them, Machiste,
mm-hmm.
Mariah, I mean, with things that have happened in here, where it feels like he doesn't have a grasp on the characters and who they are. And it felt like with the last two writers, with Burkett and with Grell, who created it, of course, one created the property, the other was a huge mega fan. And this reads, these latest episodes with Fleischer have read like an assignment.
Yeah.
And an assignment, not in a good way, by someone who's doing some stuff. And there's some stuff that's okay, but I find myself a little bit bored. He gets a little wordy in here. And I feel like he doesn't have a grasp of the character. So it's that first instance where we're reading the title and I'm like, you know how so many times today you get the writer and you're like, wait a minute, that's not how Logan is. Wait a minute, that's mm-hmm. not how Clark would react.
Yeah, yeah.
they just don't know. They're writing something that they think is a good story and not respecting who the character is.
In my mind, that's kind of sort of potentially the difference between a journeyman and a master craftsman for writing.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking, a journeyman.
I think there are other journeymen that are much better on the continuity and just solid, reliable, day-in, day-out writers. They could write till they're blue in the face and it would be of the same quality. So some journeymen are better than others. It's not just a one-level kind of a deal.
I agree.
But this definitely feels like an assignment. I've got to do something. I need some subplots. So, we've got these pairings. We've got Machiste and Mariah. Let's break them up. Let's have Mariah go chasing Travis for a bit. That'll cause chaos with him and Tara. That seemed to be the main point of Travis's quest.
And you and I, knowing the characters, Mariah wouldn't have just tossed Machiste like that. She was in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
And she never showed that deep interest towards Travis. So it came out of the blue. And you're just like, this doesn't make any sense. And then the love interest, even from, I'm trying to think of her name, the cat.
Shakira.
Shakira. Shakira has never shown that. She's shown protection over Travis.
Mm-hmm.
Like a cat would towards its master or its owner, whatever you want to say.
It's person, yeah.
It's person. Yeah. But she's never shown a love interest. We've always viewed her more as a cat. And then they start making her jealous and angry. And I'm just like, this stuff doesn't make sense.
I think with characters, there's an aspect of, there's a core to every character that most people would be able to agree upon.
Yeah.
But then there's, the further you get from that core, there's stuff that some people see as window dressing, other people see as important facets of their personality or something.
Yep.
But that's where you get a little more wiggle room and stuff. And I think, in my mind, this writer is deviating from what I consider to be core aspects of the character, but clearly they didn't think that way.
Yeah.
And more to the point, the editors didn't seem to think that way or exert any control over it.
Yeah. It felt like they were creating a drama and love triangles where none it should exist. They existed with that musician in the past, you know, a past love, a past flame.
Mm-hmm. Graymore.
Graymore, yep, that was his name. But that was written in there and that was done well, and it didn't put anyone at, this is not who they are and how they would be. It just felt very weird.
And with Graymore, that was the point of the character.
Yeah, that's why he was put in the story.
With what's happening with Mariah here and over the course of these four issues, Machiste and to a lesser degree Tara and even Shakira runs counter to most of what we had seen for the first 100 issues.
Yeah. And when you are reading something like that, I'm feeling it. And you can imagine when these were coming monthly off the rack, the people who are reading this would be like, this doesn't make any sense. He doesn't know who these characters are. And you can see the complaints happening. And it's because, yeah. And I don't know why the editors didn't say something, or maybe they agreed with it, like you said. And there's just no explanation other than maybe he never read the previous material and he thought this would be something cool to do. And ultimately, if the editors are just like looking for punctuation and spelling errors because they're busy, maybe that happens.
Well, at this point, the editor was Robert Greenberger, and he'd only been on for a little while at this point, I think.
Yeah.
And he'd done quite a bit over with the Star Trek stuff, I believe. It may be that they just thought, hey, it's 100 issues in, we need to shake stuff up, or we've got a new writer, he wants to go in this direction, sure, why not?
Let's try it, see what happens.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's definitely a tonal shift and a characterization shift that I don't think benefits the book.
I would agree, and there was other weird things that happened that I'm sure we'll talk about with Jennifer, things like that.
Well, we at least get a mention in this issue that he's trying to find a cure for Jennifer.
Yes.
That's the extent that this issue ties into the quest.
Yep. And how did you think that played out with Jennifer?
Well, that was mainly in, I think, the next issue, 116 or whatever.
Correct.
We're going to bounce around on that. That's fun. I was massively, massively disappointed with that.
Yes.
Because it's basically the sorcerer wizard or whatever that Travis went to at the beginning of the quest that sent him to the far ends of Skartaris is gotten power to nearby kingdom.
Yep.
Travis has gotten wind of it and realized he's been played. He goes, he storms into the thing. The guy is starting to age Travis.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer, who is 100 plus-ish at this point, has enough strength to go magically be over there. The Eye of whatever it was, Eye of Anakar or whatever, gets destroyed. Suddenly she's young. Travis is fine. All is right in the world. And we're done.
That was so anticlimactic, wasn't it? Because we had spent issues upon issues upon issues. Jennifer's quest, the quest to save her. And it's like, boom, done. And literally one page.
16 issue quest for Travis to find a cure for her. And it comes down to she basically, you know, either blinks or wiggles her nose, depending if you're a Bewitched or an I Dream of Jeannie fan. And story's done.
Yeah, she closes her eyes, like scrunches up her little nose and boom.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, you could have done that a long time ago.
just toss in the sound effect from whichever sitcom you'd prefer and you're done.
I read that and I was just like, you get the feeling, what was the point of all this buildup when she could have just scrunched up her nose and she's young and vibrant?
It was killing time. The fact it was a 16-issue quest and build as such, it just floored me.
No payoff.
None. None whatsoever.
I was so disappointed at that point. So disappointed. I was just like, it just, when you put 16 issues into something just for it to go splat, womp womp, I was just like, wow, why did I read that? That's how you feel at that point.
Well, and I think that's an aspect of Fleischer's writing beyond just the quest, because this assassin who's working with Desaad and stuff.
Yeah.
Once Desaad's out of there in 115, do we see her again in these issues?
I don't think so.
I think just poof, she's gone.
Yeah, just boom.
And that's disappointing.
There's a lot of disappointing things in here.
There's also a few things that confuse me in so much as there was a big to-do initially of there's only so many bullets left in this gun.
Yep.
So let's get rid of the quick way to solve problems. But then, one, that doesn't seem to matter. And two, the wizard Travis wound up actually meeting, not the initial one, but the Bizarre Haggerzin or whatever his name was, who gave him the ring at the one point.
Yeah.
That's how he's able to see through illusions, including technology created ones that Desaad's using. And now suddenly things that would have been a few pages worth of, oh, how does he deal with this? It's just, oh, he walks right through it.
Yeah, just crazy. I just question a lot of it. And then he does introduce that new character, the guy who's flying the Blackbird into Skitaris.
That's the guy from the annual.
Yep, I remember.
Redmond.
Yep.
Because a CIA guy seems like he ought to know how to fly a fighter, not a fighter jet, a stealth jet or whatever the hell that is.
Yeah, it's a big Blackbird like they have in the X. And I'm just like, none of that made sense. He's not a pilot. He's a CIA operative. He's flying a Blackbird into Skitaris to find out where these Mayan-looking characters came from. You remember the Aztec Mayan?
Technically, he's not flying into Skitaris.
That's true, yeah.
He flies to Dinosaur Island.
That's true.
There's a footnote of this ties into the Suicide Squad and all of that from World War II, pointing to a recent issue of Secret Origins that tied Task Force X, Suicide Squad, and all that into a multi-decade kind of thing.
Yeah.
He crashes there, goes through a cave, and then comes out in Skitaris.
Yeah, which was just insane. Just insane. But I'm rolling with it. Okay.
What did you think of the blonde who was introduced at the end of 116 in that epilogue page in the City of Thieves?
The blonde, she was fine. It's just like, I didn't like her as a character. I'll say that.
She wasn't given much characterization in that page. So yeah.
None at all. She's just like this strong, brutish, almost like a guy. It was just weird. I'm like, what am I supposed to think of this character? You know, what am I supposed to do with this? Because you're literally looking at her, some big, strong dude comes and she's able to hoist him above her head and toss him like he's nothing. And I'm like, what's going on here? Who's this girl? And then it's a special spotlight on Tara. You're like, okay, let's go with this.
Yeah, because we're essentially going to park everything and focus on Tara for 117. We do get a little bit more with the blonde here.
Yeah.
But I think that's in more in 118 than... No, I guess we get some of her in 117 too.
Exactly. They talk about it like it was going to be the whole episode or episode issue, but it was very limited. You kind of got a little bit of a story of her, but it was more focused, I felt like, on the CIA guy in the next issue.
I think 117 has quite a bit of the Mariah Machiste soap opera.
Yes, that's true. It had a lot of that.
Where she kind of neglects the whole, mention that whole amulet thing that caused the love whammy on Travis.
Yep.
So those two definitely break up. We get the whole plot line on Tara being chased, having to fend for herself. I think this may have been where we kind of last see the assassin.
Correct. Yeah.
And again, that whole thing just seemed to be killing time and ending with a, oh, we'll pick up with everything next issue kind of a deal. So I felt like Travis was a guest star in 117.
Yep.
The blonde still hadn't been identified as who she is.
Exactly. And they had said at the bottom of the last thing, the Tara episode, or episode issue, and I was just like, where is she? I kept flipping, where is she? She's not even here. And then, like, midway through the book, you get a little bit on her.
Yeah, because she's, how many pages is she in?
Not very many.
In the two-page splash, because she's having nightmares.
Yeah, and then you see her on the boat. That's pretty much it with the little girl.
Well, Tara is not the blonde. The blonde we see for two pages, that's somebody else. Tara's in about half the issue, but it's all over the place, and they keep cutting back and forth on stuff. But they have to establish that the blonde is trying to get to New Atlantis.
Correct.
And that she's got powers beyond just strength, because she exhibits essentially super speed, because that's convenient. And then when we get to 118, that's where we start getting a little more information on her.
Correct.
Because now it's clear she can fly. She's got other powers.
She has powers.
And she is trying to learn of her backstory, her heritage. Because at this point, and I forget if they point out which issue of Secret Origins that was from, but this is Power Girl, who is, Secret Origins 11.
Yep.
Who had been a Kryptonian from Earth 2 pre-Crisis. Crisis slammed her into the remaining Earth. Everybody kind of forgets about all of that. So now she doesn't have a backstory because she can't be Supergirl. There is a Supergirl. So she is essentially reimagined by the writers to be the granddaughter of Lord Arion and Lady Chain from the Arion Lord of Atlantis 25-issue series that had a preview in Warlord way back when.
Yeah, and she was going to Skataris to get in touch with her Atlantean roots.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, it's kind of mind warp, but yeah, that's where we're going. Okay.
What gets me is when she finally gets to New Atlantis, which in the beginning of the issue is referred to as a deserted boneyard.
Yeah.
And she gets there, and it's certainly deserted, but I'm not seeing any bones.
No bones at all.
Which I'm fine with. I don't need to see the bones, but it's just kind of funny to describe it that way and then not have it be that way.
Yeah. It just looks like not many people are there.
But we wind up in 118 with Machiste being very upset and demonstrably so with Travis and storming off.
Yep.
We've got Mariah planning on leaving, maybe heading back to Russia.
Yep.
Power Girl is in her own little subplot that doesn't really connect to anybody.
Exactly. It's completely different.
And Jennifer is still working on getting her kind of powers back. We get a little bit with Redman. Do we even see Tara in this issue? We get a little of her at the beginning.
A little tiny bit. That's pretty much it. Yeah, Jennifer, she was able to, wiggle her nose and turn young, but she doesn't have all her power set. I've lost some of my skills now, which is, I don't know. I'm just rolling with it. Okay.
Because Tara, actually, she's still fighting the female assassin. So we see more of her than I had given credit to.
Yeah.
But that's basically drop a scene in each issue almost, and it's moving at a snail's pace.
It really is. And it's so disconnected from everything else that we've been reading. It almost feels like they took another comic and stuck it in here.
Yeah, if we look at 118, the first chunk is all Power Girl stuff.
Yep.
We get a little with Travis, like a page. Then we get Tara versus the assassin. That ends unclearly. We get back to Travis for a few pages. Cut to Redman as he's gotten into Skartaris. And then Jennifer trying to build up her powers again with Mariah saying, yeah, I'm leaving. Back to Travis for a few pages, and then back to Power Girl in New Atlantis for no reason, back to Machiste and Travis, and ending on that note. So we're cutting a lot, and it's a lot of little chunks, and no one thing really builds up.
Yeah.
And there's never that kind of main plot line that was kind of the hallmark in the Grell stuff of, yeah, we may cut to a few things just to show there's other stuff going on, but, hey, dinosaurs attack or whatever.
Yeah, he has different things, but it's so disconnected, it feels. The best way to describe this comic is disjointed.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going from scene to scene, and sometimes scenes have nothing to do with each other. And so you're just a little off kilter. Like we've said at the very beginning when we first started talking, Journeyman, but there's levels to it, and this is Journeyman, not in the good way.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this level of Journeyman, if they're paired with a really strong editor, and that's not to say Robert Greenberger isn't a strong editor, but I don't know that he was doing strong editing on this in terms of guidance for where to go with the story and things like that.
That's exactly what I think. I feel like he didn't have a lot of guidance and he was just given free rein to make something good. And that's what happened.
But I don't think he is making something good because we wind up with the main cast, the core characters, almost at odds and storming off in different directions.
Yeah, at each other's throats, literally, or getting socked in the gut.
Yeah.
By your best bud. Yeah.
The next time almost any two of these characters get together, there's after effects and blowback to be had that needs to get resolved.
Yep. So it was just disappointing because of what came before. And we've discussed this with so many comics, and here we're getting it with Warlord, is that if you put a competent writer or someone who's a fan or really knowledgeable of it, you can end up with something beautiful, a beautiful transition like we did from Grell over to Burkett. Or you can have something that's a little more jarring or a lot more jarring like we've had to hand out here with Fleischer. And it's just unfortunate because I like property a lot. I love it. But this is probably modern day James will be the point where I'm like, ah, this is not working for me. I'm jumping off. And I hate to say that, but that's how I would feel because of all the good stories I had before.
I can totally understand that. I don't think this group was as bad as the previous four.
I agree with that. The previous four were worse.
But it's still not great. And I think some of it is there's a couple of aspects of Fleischer's writing in these issues that's disappointing me. He often neglects to introduce or name characters in issues.
Yes.
So it's the blonde, it's this, it's not, oh, that's so-and-so. And he jumps around and cuts from scene to scene, I think, too much.
Yes.
So everything seems like just a snippet versus a meaty thread of something. You could either argue he's building a mystery or it's just inaccessible storytelling, depending how charitable you are. And I'm leaning towards more the inaccessible than building a mystery, because he's not making me wonder, well, what's going on with this or what's going to happen with that or anything of the sort. I just come out a little frustrated.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly how I felt. I felt frustrated. And then maybe we get something from the CIA agent going to Skitaris. I don't know. I'm not expecting a lot at this point, just based on what we've seen.
We do see more of him. I'm not going to say it's anything great or that it has great payoff.
But he does come. Yeah.
We see a little more of him at the very least.
But on a personal note, when you start tying in Kryptonian stuff and all that stuff, I was just like, eh. And I'm not saying that because I don't like Kryptonians. I'm just like, I see the whole world of Skitaris and the comic The Warlord as something so separate. And I get the tying it in and putting it all in the part of the big universe. But for me, that's just a personal preference. I wish it would have been left separate.
I agree with that. But I do think this was a point in DC's publishing history where they were trying to ditch the chaos of the multiverse, get something that was a little easier for readers to understand, or so they felt, and kind of streamline it and tie things together.
Yeah.
And there was a line, I think it was in 116, where Desaad refers to this as like a private dimension or something.
Okay.
And even Redman at one point refers to a nexus to an extra dimensional world. So Skitaris has kind of moved from being literally inside the Earth to a pocket dimension of some sort, maybe.
Okay.
Which I don't really care either way, but to me, it's a noted difference in how the world is being treated. And I felt the original one with the Hollow Earth thing goes back to almost the pulp era of, what was it, Particular or whatever that world of the world inside the Earth and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's something so classic and something that he was literally creating inside of for DC, building a little world based on that mythos. And that's what I thought made it cool.
Exactly. And now it's just you could walk through a portal you don't realize effectively.
Yeah, it doesn't leave you with the same feeling, the same joy, the same mythos that we've had from the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Land of the Lost and stuff like that.
Yeah.
All that stuff tied into a Hollow Earth. And it's just, okay, we're going in a different direction. But I know for a fact, and you know for a fact, if Grell was there, that wouldn't be happening.
He might still tie it into DC, but I think in a different manner. It almost would have been maybe Cave Carson shows up or something like that.
Yeah.
Instead of Power Girl was in an odd spot. They had to do something with her. I don't think bringing her in here was either a great move or a horrible move. I don't know that it really pays off.
Yeah.
But when she gets her expositional thought balloons of here's what happened in Secret Origins, I've got this new origin, and mentions the struggle between Arion and his evil brother Garn Danuth from that series.
Yeah.
Okay, if you're bringing that up here, that kind of means that evil brother has to kind of play into her arc here somehow.
Yep.
Otherwise, why mention it?
Yeah. Are we just filling space and using, do you have a word quota that you're trying to meet? We don't know.
And going from Kryptonian to magic and some stuff like that, it was never a great fit, I thought, but I'm not sure what they really should have done with the character at this point anyways.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised at this point that the title only had about another year or two left in it. And it's not horrible reading, because this was around the era I got in. Part of it was the Crisis stuff, part of it was Legends. It's like, okay, you know, let's follow on. Oh, we got Power Girl. That's great.
Yeah, it's not horrible. It's just, I think if you didn't know better, like you said, you were getting in here, it's fine. But the problems that we're having is
we've read the other stuff.
We read what became before. And we're like, what? Wait, this is not making sense.
This pales in comparison, in some places kind of contradicts earlier stuff.
Yeah.
And I think if they had gone more with the pulp world inside of a world, oh, there's this ancient technology from the Atlanteans in a almost, I don't say medieval world, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fun stuff they could do there. And I do think Ron Randall is doing a good job on the art.
I agree.
But every time I look at that female assassin, her outfit looks like it's straight out of the Barren Earth.
It really does. It really does. I'll tell you what. What's interesting, you could pick any story in any period, but imagine, remember Superman when it went Warlord of Mars?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if that was, and this is hard to do, the first Superman I ever read. The first Superman I ever picked up and read the comic. I'd been like, this is the coolest thing ever. And maybe somebody who's more steeped in the character Superman and read what came before. No, this is, he's ripping off the, no, it's not like this.
I don't know if those were my exact words when I talked about those issues, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, there'd be a disconnect between the way you viewed it and the way I'd viewed it if I was just stepping in, and you just coming in at Warlord near the end, you probably thought this is cool. Us having read everything that came before, we're like, I'm not so sure here. Where you jump in and your perspective and what the baggage you bring can change a story completely.
Oh, absolutely. Half of a story is the baggage you bring into it.
Yeah.
At least. And I think there's some fun aspects of this. I don't think this is as well written as what had come before by a long shot.
Yep.
But it's not complete and utter crap either.
Correct. It's not.
And if you find this enjoyable, you owe it to yourself to read the earlier stuff, because I think Grell was just knocking it out of the park at the beginning. And I think Kerry Burkett had that epic year-long kind of time loop run that was a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that not only hit the right notes of Warlord, but it was evocative of the classic Land of the Lost Saturday morning series and stuff like that in all the right ways without being duplicative of it either.
I agree. And if you like any of this stuff, the omnibus, you need to pick that up. The first volume's out and the second's on the way.
Yeah.
It's just great material. Can't recommend it enough.
Now, that second one, I think is going to go up, I want to say, to issue 71.
Which is probably all the Grell stuff, I would imagine, or most of it.
That is the end of the Grell stuff.
Huh.
Kerry Burkett picked up on 72.
And if I had to guess, I do not think they'll come out with a Burkett Warlord. But I could be wrong. Omnibus. But if I'm wrong, cool.
What are the page counts on those omnibus? Because Burkett's run is only, I want to say, about 540 or so pages?
Yeah, I'm going to check it out right now. The first one is for sale, so I am going to Amazon, and the second one's being solicited on Amazon. They give you this page count down at the bottom. 736 for the first one. The second one, it's 768 pages. So they're smaller omnibus.
If they do it by author, you'll wind up with about 673-ish pages.
Yeah, so we could get a nice Burkett one, and then I'd be happy to stop there.
The Fleischer one would be about 900 pages, though. And if you're going to do Burkett, they may as well do Fleischer.
Do Fleischer and fin it off. Yeah. It'll look nice having four of them.
But I really think Grell is the peak of it. Burkett did a very good job, more so on the first year than the second. Fleischer, I think, has been struggling.
I agree. I'm hoping he turns it around, but based on how many issues are left, I'm not hopeful.
Yeah, we've got... How many issues do we have left? Because next time we're also going to cover Secret Origin 16.
Okay.
Or half of that issue, because that's got another retelling of Warlord's origin, but this time post-crisis. But yeah, there's only about 18 issues all said and done, including that and the final annual.
Okay.
So we've got another 420-ish pages.
Yeah, and then we're all done.
And again, it's not bad. It's just the characterizations are off from what we had established, and it's just not as good as where the title had started and its highlights.
I agree.
And that happens to most titles over time. That's inevitable.
It really does. I mean, the further you get away from, and I hate to say this, but the magic, the most creative person is typically the person who created it. Not always. It's not always the best. It really isn't. But those creative juices come flowing out. And then when the baton is passed, there's a little spark is maybe lost or something is invigorated. I feel like Burkitt came in with some new energy. It was different. And now the baton was passed and I felt like the spark was lost.
I think Burkitt's run had a little more of a sci-fi element to it.
It did.
Without invalidating or getting rid of kind of the swords and sandals aspect. Whereas I think Fleischer's run is feeling more soap opera melodrama kind of a thing in the wrong ways.
In the wrong way being the key. Yeah.
So we've only got about 5 more of these spotlight episodes left for Warlord. I think we may want to just kind of accelerate that just a little bit, just to keep the story momentum up. Maybe that'll help the reading or whatever, and just see how it kind of ends and if it lands the ending or not.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Let's knock out the next few and see if it works better for us reading it quicker like that.
Sounds good. Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, forum, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayo. And thanks again for listening.